on a Monday. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin set all-time highs for the number of coronavirus tests and the number of positive results on Friday. And in recent days, our state has increased testing capacity to 50 labs and is recruiting and training just an arsenal of contact tracers. That's a key piece of the governor's Badger Bounce Back Plan. So what questions do you have about the state's response to COVID-19? What do you want to know about businesses deemed essential or non-essential? Have you or a loved one contracted COVID-19? What do you want to tell the head of the health department? We're at 800-642-1234. Andrea Palm is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Secretary Palm, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. It's good to talk to you again.
You are getting a ton of pressure to reopen the economy, and now the high court is involved. Do you think May 26th is a realistic date to keep Wisconsinites at home?
Mm-hmm. So we certainly think that safer at home is working. Our models tell us it's working. The people of Wisconsin have been unbelievable partners in helping us flatten the curve, but there certainly is more work to do, right? The Badger Bounce Back Plan helps us have a framework for that, and one of those key indicators is this downward trajectory in number of positive cases as a percent of total tests. And we're very flat on that metric, and we need to start pushing it down. We need to see that downward trend to make sure that we are in a position to continue to protect our frontline healthcare workers and our hospital systems. And so we are making really good progress, but we still have work to do.
Critics of the bounce back plan say that it has vague and ambiguous language, and it's a plan that's better suited for a state with a severe outbreak. Is the plan too constrictive? Are the metrics unachievable, and that would perhaps make it inconceivable for our economy to actually have a chance to bounce back?
Mm-hmm. So I think there are a couple things folks need to remember. I think one is we on the front end were very inclusive of our definition of essential business. We have more businesses who have remained open in Wisconsin than many other states. And while it's not enough, and we are working hard to get to a place where more things can open up, people also need to remember that this is a highly contagious disease that without a vaccine or medical intervention, we are all still susceptible to it. And our tools to prevent infection are physical and social distancing, and then paired with this increase in testing and contact tracing. So when we do have cases, we can wrap around them quickly and prevent the spread. But those basic public health tools are what we have. And so we've got to continue to double down on our ability to stay physically distanced so that we don't have a surge in cases that does jeopardize our healthcare system.
And in recent days, you have loosened restrictions for certain businesses. How does DHS decide which businesses can open and which must remain closed? What sectors mm-hmm. to remain closed?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question, Kate. And, you know, we're very focused on turning the dial when we can on really helping our businesses and our communities start to see some semblance of normal. But we do that right through the lens of our public health experts and their advice around what is risky, which is why you saw us equalizing this curbside pickup and drop-off, right? That was available already to a number of businesses. And so we leveled the playing field for other small businesses who could do curbside pickup and drop-off. We thought that was, based on the advice we got from our experts, a low-risk opportunity to allow more commerce without increasing the infection risk for our citizens. So that's the kind of calculations we're making as we're considering and thinking about how to progress through Badger Bounce Back, get us to a place where we are more open.
You have aligned this morning with DHS Secretary Designee Andrea Palm, the state's top health official. What questions do you have about the state's response to the coronavirus? What do you want to know? Are you in self-quarantine? Tell us about your situation and what you want clarity on. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary, you know, a part of the bounce back plan is this criteria of 14 days trending downward in the number of new cases and the trajectory of those cases. Can you explain for us about this 14 days? What are you looking for?
So I think one of the things that that we did in developing Badger Bounce Back was look around the country at people who've been thinking a lot about this. So national public health experts, state and local experts, and obviously we took a close look at the White House plan around thinking about how to safely reopen. And one of the common threads in those in the advice we got was this idea that a 14-day downward trajectory is an important indicator that you are moving in the right direction in a time frame that gives confidence that it's sticking, right? That it's actually real. And then this idea in our plan that you do it as a percent of positive tests is designed to smooth out daily bumps in the data so that you're not subject to a good day and a bad day throwing you off course, but you can look at it as a trend, as a trajectory, and an indicator that you're moving in the right direction.
Have you been seeing that at all in the numbers? What metrics are you watching most closely?
Mm-hmm. So on the Badger Bounce Back section of our website, we do have a dashboard that lays out those gating criteria and shows our trend lines and our trajectories over the 14 days. And it is a rolling 14 days. So a new day comes into the window and the first day, you know, falls off. And so you roll it forward on a 14-day time frame. We are super flat on our percent of positive cases as a percent of total tests. And we really do want to see that start to move in this downward trajectory, and as of yet we continue to be very flat, somewhere in just around 10% of cases are positive, which is very consistent with what we've seen internationally, but we've got to get to a place where it's moving downward, which is also what has happened internationally as people have started to feel comfortable to reopen up. They've seen a lower than 10% rate on a day-over-day trajectory.
And in terms of the modeling that you look at, what models have been helpful?
So we've done a few modeling exercises at the Department of Health Services. This most recent one that we did in consultation with some folks at Johns Hopkins, as well as some folks at UW. We've also looked at the Washington model. And I think what's really important about our most recent model, which is also on our website for folks to take a look at, but we looked at a number of scenarios to try to understand what behaviors and what interventions would need to be in place to allow us to ease off on Safer at Home and move through Badger Bounce Back. And what we found through those scenarios is what we all sort of know to be true, which is that testing and isolation and contact tracing are key pieces of being able to effectively manage this disease. And that is why you saw us really try to ramp on testing and contact tracing.
We're talking with the head of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Andrea Palm, with your questions front and center at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Health officials say contact tracing can help determine how people contracted COVID-19, and it's a way to potentially reduce the spread of the disease. State officials are also staging community testing sites in places with a lack of access to testing or where additional testing is needed because of high rates of the virus. So we're looking at these recent developments with Wisconsin's top health official on the line. We have DHS Secretary Designee Andrea Palm. What do you think of our state's approach to try to flatten the curve and manage the outbreak? What is going on in other states to combat this pandemic that you want Wisconsin to adopt? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Secretary Palm stays with us. Let's take a call now. Steve is joining us from Sun Prairie this morning. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I think one of the challenges we have here is the moving goalposts. You know, when the Safer at Home order was originally put in place, and I might add without consensus from the Republicans, which was a mistake, it was done with the thought that we have to flatten the curve so that our hospitals don't get overrun. I check every single day the WHA website and look at the number of hospitalizations, and it's pretty much flat around 350. If I remember right, the peak was around April 8th, give or take, about 446, maybe 406, I don't recall specifically. But that mission has been accomplished. There is no reason to move the goalposts, and it shouldn't be done without consensus of the Republicans. And that is a mistake that Tony is making. I'm wondering if the secretary...
Yeah, thank you for the call. And as Steve is saying, you know, we flattened the curve, so why not reopen, Secretary Palm?
Mm-hmm. So I think there are a number of things that folks need to remember. One, this was an important thing that we did together, and everybody in Wisconsin pitched in, and it's really been remarkable. Second, the virus remains the same. It is still a highly infectious disease that, absent behavior change, absent these interventions, would surge again. And so we've got to find the sweet spot, which is what the governor talks about with turning the dial. How do you turn the dial safely so that we can return to some more normal life without increasing the risk to the point that we have a surge that overwhelms the healthcare system? And part of that calculation are the tools we need to put in place to prevent that from happening. That is increased testing, that is safe isolation, and that is contact tracing. And that is the work that we have been doing throughout Safer at Home and that we continue to do and that we are making progress on, but that we still have some additional work to do to make sure we've got those boots on the ground to do the hand-to-hand combat with this disease so it does not surge again.
Well, let's talk about contact tracing. The Milwaukee Health Department now has 54 people dedicated to these case investigations, up from 19 the week before. How many contact tracers are there in the state now?
Yeah, so we also have surged contact tracing assets into the system, around 150 so far, and continue to work to do more in that space. We're also looking at how we can use technology to improve our contact tracing so that the flow of information is there, so that anybody who's doing contact tracing can make sure that interview is integrated into the system so that local public health has access to it, et cetera. So we're working through a number of issues to make sure that our contact tracing is in for the long haul like we need it to be. But it is a very fundamental tool in public health that we've been using for centuries and will be fundamental to our ability to really stop the spread of this disease.
Judy called from Appleton and couldn't stay with us, but Judy wants to know more about how to become a contact tracer. And she said she's healthy, not a medical worker, but has a college degree. Mm-hmm. What about recruitment?
Yeah. So we do get a number. Thank you, Judy. Thank you. And we do get a number of folks like Judy who reach out on a daily basis and have stood up an HR process to allow those folks to apply and come through the system and then be deployed into the system. I'll make sure, Kate, that I get you you guys that
HR clearinghouse. Okay.
Yes. So that you can get that out to Judy and to others. I'm sorry, I don't have it on the tip of my brain at the moment.
So are the contract tracers working out of their own homes? Is there a central emergency operation center, or does that vary around the state?
Mm-hmm. So we anticipate that it will vary. Right, local public health, this is their purview, it's their domain, it's their expertise, and different communities are doing it a little bit differently. The capacity we have brought on at the state level, those folks are predominantly doing it remotely. They're doing phone interviews. And we anticipate, right, with social distancing, a lot of it will remain over the phone for the protection of those contact tracers, as well as potential folks who've been potentially exposed to the disease. But local communities are going to be critical partners in helping us make sure we have a system that works for communities all across the state.
We're talking with Andrea Palm, the Secretary Designee of the State Department of Health Services, and you can bring your questions on COVID-19 and the state response as you see it at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in David now in Boscobel. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for the Secretary. With this extended stay-at-home orders, what are you doing to track the unintended consequences of higher incidence of domestic abuse and alcoholism and suicide from people who are just in despair as a result of this?
Yeah, that is a great question, and is certainly one that I lose sleep over. Isolation is not good for people's behavioral health, for their mental health and well-being, and we certainly want to make sure that people have access to the services they need, whether it's healthcare or behavioral healthcare. And so we have done a number of things as it relates to suspending administrative regulations to make sure that things like telehealth are available in the behavioral health space, so that folks can continue to have access to professionals who can help them. We also have launched a Resilient Wisconsin campaign. The first piece of this has focused on our frontline healthcare workers, who many of whom are more like first responders at the moment. They're in roles that that are more acute, more stressful, more impacting on their mental health than their normal healthcare life was before the pandemic. And so our first module has been really focused on the behavioral health and well-being of our frontline workers. But there are lots of resources in our Resilient Wisconsin webpage for folks who are feeling that isolation themselves. And we have amped up and added resources to our crisis hotlines and to other tools that we want to make sure folks have access to if they're feeling depressed, anxious, suicidal, so that we can protect Wisconsinites, both their physical health but their emotional health as well.
Secretary, as you talk about frontline workers, part of the bounce back plan is to make sure healthcare workers have adequate access to testing. What do you envision is a robust testing program for frontline healthcare workers?
Mm-hmm. We've been working closely with our partners in the healthcare system, and many of them are working on and looking at protocols for how you think about testing healthcare workers, as well as patients who, you know, that's the other piece of this is issues around deferred care. You know, folks who weren't emergently or urgently ill have seen their access to healthcare reduced, and we've got to get back to a place where those folks can get the treatment that they need before it does become urgent and emergency. And so you've got to protect healthcare workers in that scenario, but you've also got to protect those patients who are coming into healthcare settings. And so we want to make sure that that healthcare systems have access to testing. Part of our testing assets have definitely been surged and made available to healthcare systems so that they can do what they need to do to test in a robust way their healthcare workers and their patients.
Facility-wide investigations, a new data tracking tool that you are putting out there. What should we know about these facility investigations, mostly in the southern part of the state and specifically at nursing homes and facilities in senior care?
Yeah. So we, right from the very beginning, we have been concerned about and focused on settings where folks who are most vulnerable to severe disease live, and that's nursing homes, that's assisted living, that's other kinds of congregate settings. And so we are certainly seeing, as you suggested, Kate, that a good number of the investigations we are currently involved in are in long-term care settings. And our trigger for that, because they are a vulnerable population, is a single positive case. And that could be a patient who lives there, a resident, or it could be staff, because we think it's really important to be focused on it, to get there as quickly as possible, to wrap around it and make sure that that single case doesn't turn into more. And so it is a top priority for us, and we will continue to focus on those vulnerable populations for sure.
Secretary, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kate. Have a good day.
You too. Andrea Palm, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, back after a news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick mention that as the impact of COVID-19 grows here in Wisconsin, WPR continues to bring you coverage of the latest developments from our reporters who are around the state. We've centralized our news and developments on this at WPR.org/COVID. Right now, oral arguments are set for tomorrow over the safer at home orders. The state Supreme Court is weighing a lawsuit to overturn the stay at home order issued by Governor Evers' administration that is set to expire on May 26th. Republican lawmakers asked the high court to strike down the order, saying it's crushing our economy. So do you support Republicans who are suing to end the stay-at-home order? Or do you think it sets a dangerous precedent? How long do you think the stay-at-home order should last and why? We're at 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. He is co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with these oral arguments set for tomorrow. What might we hear and how are they going to do these arguments?
Yeah, you know, they're going to do them virtually, which is what the state Supreme Court has done recently for other oral arguments. You know, they issued a bunch of orders themselves back in March that affected the way that the court system has run. And that has applied to the way that the state Supreme Court has done its business. They've already had some virtual oral arguments, and that'll be the case with these as well. I believe if you want to watch these, you can't go to the Capitol and watch the arguments. You're going to have to, you know, tune in to Wisconsin Eye.
Okay, so they'll have these arguments tomorrow. The court Friday said it would take up this case. What do we know about how the justices feel here?
We don't know specifically on this law, because this is the first time that this law has been challenged before the court. You know, generally speaking, excuse me, it wouldn't be a Monday if I didn't have a frog in my throat there.
That's
Kate.
Okay. Take your time.
Sorry. Yeah. If we know, generally speaking, that this court has sided with Republican lawmakers on a number of disputes between the executive and the legislative branch recently. We know that it's got a 5-2 conservative majority on the court. So those are kind of the factors that everybody's looking at. But when it comes to COVID-19 and, you know, the historic times we're living in, maybe a little uncertainty there. I mean, the court did issue an order back in March. This affected its own operations, but it shut down jury trials until, you know, May 22nd, that's about when the state's stay-at-home extension is set to expire. So it's not like it's something that the entire court has said, you know, you just never mind what's going on here, go about your business. They took kind of an extraordinary step in the court system, but this will be the first time that they're weighing in on the powers that are before them right now.
Okay, so step back here on the case itself. Why did Republican lawmakers file a lawsuit with the state Supreme Court here?
They're saying that DHS Secretary Andrea Palm overstepped her authority when she issued the stay-at-home extension. So we've heard a lot of executive orders, emergency orders issued over the past couple months by Governor Tony Evers and his administration. Evers has his own set of emergency powers that he unlocked almost 2 months ago now. And those have allowed him to issue a number of orders, but those expire after 60 days. And those can be revoked at any time by the legislature by passing a joint resolution. They don't need the governor's signature to strike them down. You know, the legislature has the power to turn those on or off over the course of 60 days. The powers that they're challenging with Andrea Palm are different. They're written into state law. They've been in state law for a long time, and they give her power to deal with communicable diseases. And the law spells out things like, you know, lets the Department of Health Services shut down schools, shut down churches, you know, ban gatherings. I mean, these are the kinds of things that the law spells out. But what lawmakers are saying is that even if DHS wants to do that, DHS has to promulgate administrative rules that send those orders through the legislature. And that essentially would give the legislature veto power over what the Evers administration does.
All right. Well, let's take a call on this. Eric is with us from Portage. Oh, I'm sorry. And Eric is not here. How about Barbara in Rice Lake? Hi, Barbara. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. I just want to point out that the Republicans just seem to be very foolish. They're trying to take away all the powers because we have a Democratic governor. But they don't seem to realize that those changes are going to apply when a Republican is in office also. Thank you.
Barbara, thanks for calling in. Sean, State Senator Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald spoke about the lawsuit that Republican lawmakers filed with the state Supreme Court on WISN's Upfront.
Listen, we've got a process, a very formal process that we've used for hundreds of years here in Wisconsin, which is called rulemaking, which is a back and forth discussion between the executive branch and the legislative branch when you're making law. And they have completely circumvented that.
Okay, so we hear, the majority leader, Scott Fitzgerald, there saying there is process here. Barbara from Rice Lake saying, look, this could come back and haunt Republicans later.
I think any time that, a legislature takes power away from an executive, it's viewed differently depending on the political circumstances, for sure. As far as the rules that Senator Fitzgerald's talking about, it's kind of an arcane process. It is a lengthy process, and that's sort of the crux of the debate here, is that they want the Evers administration to go through the legislature to issue these administrative rules. The Evers administration is saying that takes time, you know, that when you're dealing with communicable diseases, they move fast, and you need an executive branch to be nimble, you know, and be able to react to what's happening on the ground based on numbers that are changing quickly.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. We're looking at the rising tension and litigation over the Safer at Home order that restricts our movements to try to curb the spread of the virus. If you're against a stay-at-home order, what restrictions do you think are appropriate during this pandemic? What do you make of this lawsuit? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Sean, what has the Evers administration's response been to this lawsuit with the state Supreme Court?
So, there have been kind of an abbreviated week of briefs here, and the Evers administration asked the Supreme Court to dismiss the case or at the very least hear oral arguments, which the court is now going to do. They said that, the DHS powers are well grounded in state law. I mean, if you go and look at the section of the statutes on communicable diseases, it spells out these powers for the DHS secretary. And then they also said, essentially what I was just mentioning there, that time is of the essence when it comes to dealing with communicable diseases, when it comes to dealing with something like COVID-19, and that other states don't have these types of restrictions on their the equivalent of their health officer, basically, mm-hmm. that they, you know, having to go through the administrative rule process like a governor has to in Wisconsin under the law and under other laws for sure, will slow things down to the point that the state can't effectively as a government respond to COVID-19.
The virus could spread more quickly than the political process could perhaps keep up with. Let's go to Greg now in Sheboygan with thoughts on this. Greg, hi.
Hello. I believe that the Republicans are acting unconscionably by opening up, well, even the voting, in-person voting. Now, in my estimation, and I know that they've caused some cases of, and I think each one of them is manslaughter. I mean, these guys, yeah, they're in a position, they have to use their minds. I mean, I was a biochemist and things, and I'm I work for a business that is allowed to stay open during the COVID-19 crisis, and I'm voluntarily staying in my room. I haven't left my room except for I went fishing on Sunday all by myself. I kept distance from everybody. But only thing I do is go to the store once in a while, and otherwise I'm just sitting home.
So Greg, Greg is being very rigid about the social distancing and about the safer at home order. Sean, what do we know about the timeline of the Supreme Court case and if they rule against Governor Evers?
We don't really know much about the timeline because they can move very quickly when they want to. You know, they did. It was a different law and, you know, different circumstances. But Governor Evers did bring that. He did try to postpone the April 7th election. He issued that order on April 6th using a different set of powers. And the Supreme Court struck it down like 4 hours after he issued it. So they can move that fast when they want to. And I think when this case was filed, Republicans were asking them to stop the safer at home extension from taking effect. Well, it took effect. So they've moved a little slower already. And then I think a lot of us were watching for potentially an order as soon as late last week, because briefs were filed by Thursday. And it seemed like potentially, you know, that they could issue something on a Friday. They didn't take that step. So it's already taken a little longer than some of their one of their recent expedited cases. But how long it goes from here after oral arguments on Tuesday, we do not know.
And if Republicans win the case, they have 6 days to find a compromise with Governor Evers.
So that is their suggestion.
Okay.
The court would not be bound by it. You know, they're asking the court to issue a 6-day stay to basically freeze everything as it is right now so that they can, the Evers administration can send an administrative rule down. The Evers administration says that's impossible, that 6 days by law, you can't get through the administrative rule process that quickly. So, it's up to the court to decide whether or not to issue a stay or how long. And even if they do, 6 days might not be enough time to get something done between Evers and the legislature, even if they were willing to do that.
We have WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson as our guide. If the Safer at Home order stays in place to the end of the month, will your business survive? How do you think the state should balance reopening the economy with public health? What do you think of a patchwork approach to reopening businesses in more rural areas that have seen fewer cases of the disease? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with more State Cap and Sean Johnson here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at competing views on how to reopen Wisconsin's economy and the politics of fighting the coronavirus pandemic, the Supreme Court case. Governor Evers proposed criteria for loosening restrictions on businesses, but Republicans said it still imposes too many hurdles for businesses to get back on track. What course of action should Wisconsin be on here? And how do you want decisions made as to what can open and when? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. We have WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who stays with us. So, Sean, what solutions have Republican lawmakers presented for reopening the economy? We did hear from the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce last week, the state's Chamber of Commerce. What's on the table?
So there's no Republican bill out there. You know, they haven't introduced a formal bill and said, this is our response. And they didn't present one to the court either. They're saying that the Evers administration overstepped its authority and that future orders need to go through the legislative rulemaking process. So they're still saying any of these orders would be developed by the governor's office. They're not coming out with their own plan per se. All that said, I would say they have definitely rallied around this WMC plan, Back to Business. It's, the state's largest business group. Broadly speaking, the WMC plan would replace the governor's plan for, a more gradual reopening of the state, potentially a very gradual reopening of the state. Where the governor's plan is based on testing and a 14-day decline in the percentage of positive tests and hospital bed capacity, metrics like that, those metrics are absent from the WMC plan. So what the WMC plan would do is a business would basically, the way that they envision it, they'd go to a state website, plug in the type of business that they are based on a national code that categorizes different industries. That would tell the state what kind of interactions potentially they would have with customers or other employees. And then they plug in where they are. And so then the state would, look at what type of hospital bed capacity they have in the region and, the percentage of positive cases they have in their county. And that would give them suggestions on the types of restrictions that they would need to have at their business. So when I say restrictions, I'm talking about like what type of personal protective equipment that people would have to wear, masks or gloves potentially, but it's not really a mandate and it doesn't really spell out exactly what type of stuff business employees would have to wear depending on the circumstances. It's kind of, a rough outline of what something could look. And it would, I think the key thing is it would be more regional and not statewide, and it would not rely on those testing benchmarks.
And so this is where we've heard about that patchwork approach to opening up the community and offering rural Main Streets more of an opportunity to get businesses open. What has the Evers administration said about that?
So Evers has said that there's some things to like about the WMC plan. He hasn't come out and attacked it. When he talks about a regional approach, he's less favorable of that, though. The idea that you could have more restrictions in Dean County or Milwaukee County or, Brown County or Kenosha County, as we're looking at the latest data, more restrictions in place like that and fewer restrictions in smaller counties. I mean, the governor has said the trouble with that is that the virus won't respect county lines, and some of those rural counties are the counties that have the smallest hospital capacity. So that's the general back and forth between Republicans who want the regional approach and Governor Tony Evers, who does not.
The governor also ordered a 5% cut in state spending due to revenue losses from COVID-19. What decisions have been made about which areas would see cuts?
He was talking about a 5% state operations budget cut. And so just to give you some perspective on that, I mean, a 5% operations cut, the governor estimated it would save the state about $70 million in this fiscal year. That's $70 million. The two-year budget, which is all funds, state and federal funds, is about $84 billion. Mm. So, you don't want to minimize $70 million because it's not nothing. But it is a drop in the bucket for the overall budget. And the governor has said in a letter to the White House that without some help, the state is going to have a $2 billion deficit in the upcoming year. So there's going to be some tough decisions on the horizon in terms of dealing with this budget, given the way things are going and given our astronomically high unemployment rate right now.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief, looking at the situation and the state's response to COVID-19, the lawsuit as well, with your insights, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kelly now in Cascade. Hi, Kelly. What are you noticing?
Hi. Yeah, so I'm a manager in healthcare. I'm worried about the economy. I've had to personally go through layoffs, but I'm also very concerned about opening prematurely without having social distancing measures strongly in place. I think the more rural you go, the more people are not practicing social distancing. I see gatherings of families and children, you know, well above the recommendations. I see people standing in line in gas station lines, shoulder to shoulder, or in huddles of people with no one behind the desk wearing a mask. Nobody else is wearing a mask. If I walk in with a mask, I look like I've come from another planet. And nobody understands really that I'm not doing it because I have it. I'm doing it because I don't know, and I don't want to make other people be more at risk than they need to be. I don't think we can really safely reopen unless people are practicing what they need to be.
Kelly, thank you so much for bringing those observations to the table. Kelly, working as a manager in healthcare, Sean, you know, we had heard from Secretary Palm earlier, who had in recent weeks been referred to having czar-like powers over the people of Wisconsin. Who ultimately should get to decide how much risk is acceptable to take in this pandemic, and when and why a business, you know, may be able to reopen or not?
It's a big question, right? I mean, Andrea Palm has broad powers under the law, but she answers to Governor Tony Evers, who is elected by the people of the state. The legislature is saying, you know, we're the voice of the people. We're elected by the people of the state. And, you know, typically they both have a role in a situation like this. And the court is going to decide whether they both have a role in this particular situation or not. But these are big, big questions, and stuff is changing fast. You know, Kelly mentioned the mask thing. It does definitely vary depending on where you're at. Some businesses now requiring and some not. There are some states where they're requiring masks now in public, and we're not doing that here. So all of this is changing pretty quickly, and imagine what we'll be talking about a week from now.
Sean, looking closer at the budget, the UW system is one of the state's largest employers. What repercussions would a cut in state spending have on the UW system?
It all depends on the kind of cuts that we're talking about. You know, the UW is already instituting furloughs to kind of offset some of the fiscal pain. Should mention that WPR is a service of the UW-Madison. These are furloughs that are instituted up until, I think, October is when they'll be spread out to. I mean, I think there's a very real possibility, and this is just having covered state government during the Great Recession and kind of looking at what we're going through right now, that it's the tip of the iceberg here in terms of the types of spending cuts that the state's going to institute and to deal with the revenue losses here, which are substantial.
Sean, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. He's co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Just ahead, we talked with a dairy farmer from West Bend who has had to dump thousands of gallons of milk every day for over a month now. And as we continue to look at how the pandemic keeps businesses closed and affects the economy, that conversation next hour. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.